Dr. Buddha is not there yet.
She's with.
Yep, with Dr. Jacobson, just, Dr. Hilbert.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Dr. Hilbert, whenever you are ready.
I'd like to call this.
I think.
Can you hear me without the.
We can hear you just fine. Not anymore.
Now you can. Yeah. Okay. We'll use my phone.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to use my phone. I'd like to call this meeting of the New York State Council of Hospital of Blood and Transfusion Services to order. I'm Tim Hilbert, the chair of the council.
Good morning. I'm Matthew Cohn, secretary to the council. As a reminder for our members and guests, the meeting is being recorded, and this recording will be available to the public on the DOH website. So please speak loud and clearly when you need to, and slowly, I will add as a note to self. Speak one at a time, state your name before making or seconding a motion, and perhaps most importantly, please do go on mute if you are not talking. So now I'll ask the rest of the council members and the staff to introduce themselves by stating their names and affiliations. Dr. Becker.
I'm currently employed by the Texas MD Cancer Center, but I'm still representing Buffalo.
Okay, thank you. Our newest member of the council is Dr. Budhai.
Hi, I'm Alexandra Budhai. Thank you, Dr. Jacobson, for holding the camera. I'm one of the directors of the Transfusion Service at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and the lab director at one of our regional labs in Westchester. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Dr. Elder.
Hi, I'm Dr. Elder. I am the director of the lab at Krause Hospital and Lab Alliance in Liverpool.
Okay, Mr. Husky.
Hi, I'm Dave Husky. I am a public representative.
Okay. Dr. Jacobson.
I'm Jessica Jacobson. I'm the laboratory director at Bellevue and the system lead for Health and Hospitals Transfusion Services.
Dr. McCarthy.
Hi, Philip McCarthy, Emeritus Director, Stem Cell Transplant Program at Roswell Park in Buffalo.
Dr. Schmidt couldn't join from one of the public locations today, but is on the meeting as a non-voting member for the day. Dr. Schmidt?
Hi, I'm Amy Schmidt, and I cover transfusion medicine for the HCA hospital system.
Bev.
And I'm Beverly Rausch. I'm the director of the Clinical Laboratory Evaluation Program and the acting director for the Blood Resources Program for the Department of Health.
Okay. Again, we'd like to welcome Dr. Budhai to the council. Thank you for joining us. Now I'm going to ask the DOH staff in attendance to introduce themselves. Again, I'm Matthew Cohn, secretary to the council.
I'm Mary Beth Dooley with the Blood Resources Program.
Okay, and Beverly has already introduced herself. As usual, we'd like to thank the council members for their time and commitment to making these meetings a priority. Your attendance is critical to the success of the program. Okay, and I will also introduce, sorry, Tim.
Are there any members of the public that we need to?
Yes, there are several members of the public who I'd like to address, and I will just note their names and their affiliations. So we have Ruth Espinoza from KED Plasma, Bernadette Gilbert from CSL Plasma, Sarai Paradiso from New York Blood Center, and Bruce Sackis from the New York Blood Center. Council members should have received today's exhibits to be discussed. Our agenda today includes approval of proposed regulatory revisions in the minutes from our last meeting, as well as reviewing a guidance document.
Our first order of business is the approval of minutes from the April 2025 meeting. Is there any discussion of the minutes? In the absence of any questions or discussion, may I have a motion to approve the minutes presented without?
This is Rachel.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'll second Rachel Elders.
Second.
So who was moved and seconded by?
Beverly moved and Rachel, Dr. Elder seconded.
Okay. And then we need a roll call vote for this, right?
Yep.
So first be Dr. Becker. Mm-hmm. Dr. Budai.
Agree.
Mr. Husky.
Approve.
Jessica.
Dr. Approve.
Dr. McCarthy.
Approve.
Dr. Schmidt is
not voting today.
Okay. And then Beverly already voted, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now we're going to hear an overview from Beverly about the proposed rulemaking. As a reminder, we discussed the proposed changes to subpart 58.2 of Title 10 in the New York Codes, rules and regulations at the last meeting in April.
Thank you, Dr. Hilbert. Subpart 58-2 of Title 10 of the New York Codes, Rules and Regulations establishes requirements for all aspects of blood banking, including personnel qualifications, donor screening and care, record keeping, and certain technical specifications. The proposed rulemaking discussed at our April meeting was published for public comment in May of 2025, and including amendments to sections 6, 10, 25, and 27, and the repeal of section 20 regarding ambulance transfusion services. Recall that Article 30 of the Public Health Law was amended effective December 16, 2024, transferring oversight of the ambulance transfusion services to the Bureau of Emergency Medical Services within the Department of Health. Section 6 of subpart 58-2 is being amended to require periodic visual inspection of whole blood and red blood cells during storage to conform New York requirements with federal regulations. We will be discussing guidance on visual inspections expectations later on in this meeting. In sections 10, 25, and 27, the retention period for documentation is being amended to conform to the federal regulation, which requires 10 years. No public comments were received during the public comment period, and therefore propose adoption of the rulemaking as written.
Thank you, Beverly. We can now move to the question and discussion period. Now, ask any questions they have about the proposed amendment. Are there any questions? Doesn't sound like it.
No.
Okay. our next order of business is to vote to approve the proposed for adoption.
Jessica Jacobson first.
Yeah. May I have a motion to approve the proposed amendments? And I think that's Jessica. Is there anybody who's willing to second?
I'll second. It's Rachel Elder.
And then we'll do the roll call vote. Sorry. The first will be Dr. Becker.
Approve.
Dr. Budai.
Approve.
Dr. Husky. Mr. Husky.
Approve. Sorry. No problem. Approve.
Dr. McCarthy.
Approve.
Beverly.
Approve.
Okay. The motion is approved. Thank you. The next order of business is the discussion of inspection guidance. Beverly will provide a brief summary of the guidance for the council.
Thank you again. If you recall, we had a rather vigorous discussion at our April 2025 meeting regarding the expectations of the department with respect to visual inspection of blood during storage. Based on the input received during that meeting, we prepared the visual inspection guidance document to set those expectations. As mentioned in April, it is not the intent of the department to impose further paperwork burdens where it is not absolutely necessary. We understand that visual inspection is occurring naturally as part of the routine inventory control of the blood supply, and we are not prescribing the frequency of the visual inspection that is to be determined by the blood bank director. Nor are we requiring explicit documentation demonstrating the completion of visual inspection. Rather, we expect the blood banks to modify, if needed, their standard operating procedures and policies to explain the visual inspection process. During the on-site inspection of the blood bank, Department of Health staff may ask for the visual inspection policy and ask blood bank staff about the process, but they will not be requiring a checklist or worksheet to demonstrate completion of this process. You would have all received copies of the draft guidance document. We did receive, prior to the meeting, one comment that in the bullet one of that guidance, that the purpose is to identify physical changes of the blood component to indicate bacterial contamination, but also detect leakage or other physical damage to the blood container. So one thing I would like to just propose is that we change the language of that first sentence in the first bullet, which currently states the purpose of this rule is to identify physical changes in the blood component that may indicate bacterial contamination, i.e. discoloration of the component, to change it to the following language. The purpose of this rule is to identify physical changes in the blood component, such as leakage and bacterial contamination, i.e. discoloration of the blood component. So I'm just throwing that out there as a possible change to the current version of the guidance.
Seems reasonable.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
I had a question. So this applies or will apply to laboratories holding permit for storage only or limited transfusion services? Or, I mean, typically LTSs don't hold products for a long period of time, but
this would be
for something.
Yeah, this would be for the definitely for the facilities that hold a transfusion services permit. And yeah, I mean, I understood the storage only facilities, you are typically looking at storage of less than 24 hours.
Okay.
And limited transfusion services as well. Those are typically storage of less than 24 hours.
And like the ambulance, I guess we don't have any control over ambulances. If Jessica puts blood on an ambulance and it travels around the world, is that
we will require that they do storage checks.
Right. Right. The ambulances, again, would all be under the authority of the Bureau of Emergency Medical Services. So they are working on regulations. We've actually been discussing regulations with them quite a bit. I don't know their timeline. They have not. I don't know if that's been shared with their legal staff yet. But they are coming out at some point. I don't have any transparency on the timeline for those regulations pertaining to the ambulance services.
Okay. And since it doesn't specify any time, like if you were to put blood in a hemobank refrigerator or something like that, or one of these other automated refrigerators, you would define the frequency as
yes.
Anything else. Okay.
The blood bank director would be required to define the frequency in such circumstances. So that's why I believe we have that in the inspection guidance, that the frequency of visual inspection would be determined by the blood bank director and incorporated into the standard operating procedures. That's bullet four of the guidance. So that there would have to be policies for the different storage environments and locations and what their expectation would be for visual inspection in those different locations.
Okay. The only put on the or like the temp dots sometimes, and then people might, you know, question label integrity and all that, but I you know, there all of that in theory would be accomplished at the time of distribution. So with it, you know, there are things that would be captured in the issuing pre-issue visual inspections.
Yes. Yeah, because that requirement still is maintained, that there needs to be a visual inspection at the time of issuance as well.
And since there's no checklist or anything, there's no records that need to be retained for any period of time, is that so? Explicitly. Okay.
Yeah, we're basically saying you have to have a protocol for it, and it can be part of your routine processes. I know all the blood banks are doing inventory on a regular basis. It can be part of that process. But our staff, when we're going out to do an on-site inspection, we would be interviewing your blood bank staff to verify that it is being done. Okay. But we aren't going to be requiring that there's another checkbox on some form. It just, again, it's an extra burden that we're just trying to reduce that level of burden for extra paperwork. We certainly don't want a whole piece of paper just to document visual inspection.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that, since we've been doing a checklist. So, okay.
Yeah, any of the other council members have any questions about the guidance? Public comment? Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the public comment portion of the public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to say?
Beverly? This is, yes. Jessica Jacobson. When I was in Albany, we talked about derivatives. And we mentioned that maybe we would bring it up here. Is this the time that would come up?
Yeah, we could talk about it. I did do a bit more research, and Mary Beth helped with that. So we did determine that there's, we don't have anything in our current regulations that talk about informed consent being required for derivatives outside of the typical treatment consent that would be obtained for any patient in a hospital. The AABB standards do require informed consent specifically for transfusion of blood and blood components, but it doesn't discuss blood derivatives. So I think that our conclusion is that there is no clear requirement for informed consent for the issuance or administration of a blood derivative.
Okay, great.
You know, I'm just, maybe I'm going out of order. Do we need to vote on the guidance just because the...
We do, yeah. I'd like to. There was the one change to the first bullet, and if everybody's in agreement with that one change, then I would propose a motion to adopt the guidance for guidelines for visual inspection.
Yeah, we just wanted to make sure there were no public comments before we move that might suggest further changes. But having heard none.
Okay, is there anyone who would like to motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve the guidance for the visual inspection.
And if we're going to modify that first bullet point, do we need any sort of, we wouldn't have to approve, it would just be pending that.
The motion would be to approve the guidance as amended.
Yep. I can state that change again, if that, for clarity.
Okay.
Okay. So the change would be to amend the first sentence of the first bullet to read, the purpose of this rule is to identify physical changes in the blood component, such as leakage and bacterial contamination, i.e. discoloration of the component.
Okay.
And that would be the only change.
And Dr. Elder, if you'd like to make the motion again, please.
Sure. I'll make the motion to accept the modified guidance on visual inspection of RBCs, red blood cells.
Okay, do we have a second?
Jessica Jacobson will second.
Okay, and then the roll call vote would be Dr. Becker?
Approved.
Dr. Badai?
Approved.
Mr. Husky?
Approved.
Dr. McCarthy?
Approved.
And Beverly?
Approve.
Okay. Can we go back to this question about consent? I'm just so that everybody understands. You had had a discussion with Jessica about clarifying the requirement for consent for derivatives specifically?
Derivatives specifically, correct.
Okay.
It was about albumin, Kcentra, and
humate.
Correct, the non-recombinant derivatives. The question really had to do with, since New York State, when they come to inspect, they look at our issuance records for these derivatives. But what is the actual expectation from the state in terms of whether consent is required, what kind of monitoring is required, all of those things that go along with, is New York State actually considering these derivatives as blood products and therefore regulating them?
Okay, derivatives, we're talking about anything that requires more than physical separation, right? Is that how the, that is there? I think there's a definition somewhere. So if it requires more than separation or.
Right, it's not just fractionation, correct. So this would be your pooled derivatives such as albumin, Kcentra, anything from made from a source plasma, and essentially, you know, manufactured as it were into a blood derivative that would be considered under the FDA rules to be almost essentially a drug. So it would be under prescription. It would be, they're typically being issued out of the pharmacies. So it would be, and there is a definition of, I'd have to pull out the specific language of it. We did find a definition of blood derivative, blood derivative versus blood component, where component would just be, you know, you're just fractionation of the whole blood into the specific cells types.
A blood derivative could be administered at home by a layperson, mm-hmm. whereas a blood component, they really can't be delivered at home
right.
by hemophilia mm-hmm. products such as that, they get home delivery and stuff like that. So for us to be involved in that, it would be kind of a slippery slope.
Yes.
I think that's
a good point.
The definitions that I've seen are that it requires more than physical separation, so more than temperature right. or centrifugation to separate the two.
So can we expect New York State to no longer look at our albumin records?
Or they may look at the records just to ensure that you have appropriate lot numbers and those that information recorded for your blood derivatives, because there'd be a package insert, there'd be the lot numbers of those derivatives. And that would be the extent, but they should not be looking at informed consent. And of course, I will reach out to our staff and educate them on that. But if the blood derivative is being released and or stored, released out of through the pharmacy, then it's really not, our surveyors have not been requiring that to be part of the survey. At least if they have been, let me know.
They have.
Okay. So
I think the hang up is typically that something like albumin, even if it requires informed consent, is it because of the infectious disease risk? And if there's an infectious disease risk and it's treated as a blood product, are you required to keep the same sort of records as you would for a blood product? So we've been asked about even our albumin logs when the inspectors come. It's really a question of, does it fall under the heading of blood products, something like albumin, or derivatives, you know, more specifically, like
it's
humate pee or something?
It's not a blood component. It's considered a blood, larger, very general term of blood product, but it's not a blood component. That has this the same requirement for all the extra documentation, you know, as your platelets and red blood cells. So blood derivatives are treated differently. And many of the blood derivatives, they are highly manufactured. It's very controlled by the FDA. There's package inserts, there's lot numbers. The infectious disease testing is part of the manufacturing process. I think we consider that to be essentially a lower risk. It's not, it's not a blood component.
I don't think insurance thinks it's a blood product.
Right.
Because they would not cover blood products being administered at home by lay people. So if they don't consider it,
no requirement for visual inspection, just lot numbers?
For visual inspection? I would have to be stored according to the manufacturer's product insert.
Obviously, yeah. We have proper storage, but that's not the same thing as visual inspection.
No, I don't believe there's a requirement for visual inspection. That I believe in the federal requirements, that's just for the blood cells. Upon issuance, it's the blood products.
This is the federal requirement, but that's not what our inspectors have looked at in the past. So I'm just trying to clarify what is the actual expectation to the transfusion service for when we are inspected.
I think it also falls into the expectations for transfusion committee or you know, patient blood management committee, or however you call it, that, you know, what is the expectation of them to oversee and review the procedures? If it's a pharmacy product, or a drug, then really it would fall under whatever drugs or whatever procedures are typically used by pharmacy to track and trace, you know, their medications. Whereas if they're considered blood products, then the blood product requirements are slightly different. And I think most people will have some sort of oversight that falls under the transfusion committee. And this question is, it's always a question of ownership, you know, who owns these products and what are the expectations related to it? So, you know, they build it, even in the way you build it into your computer system for tracking, if you build it in as a drug versus you build it in as a blood product, the part is different.
Going back to insurance bills it as a drug rather than my son's a severe hemophiliac, and it's billed as a drug on my when he was younger.
Right.
So it was never billed as a outpatient blood product. If it was, they weren't going to cover it. So it was billed as a pharmaceutical drug.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I think that we've sort of had a bifurcated process where in New York State, because we have historically been inspected against these things, we have built them in the computer system as blood products because that was our understanding of what we were required to do and be able to produce those records. But if that's not actually the requirement, that's great for us to know, but we need to know what the rules are.
Yep, and I do recall, it's been several years, but there was an expectation for albumin and other derivatives, especially if it was being released out of the blood bank, that it did fall under those requirements. But we have backed away from that over the last few years, and anything that's coming out of that's being released out of the pharmacy, we have not held that requirement for a number of years now. But if you're saying you're still getting surveyed against that,
surveyed 2 years ago, they definitely looked at the pharmacy records for albumin.
Okay. Yeah, I know that requirement did change more than 2 years ago. So I will follow up.
I think that I don't know exactly how pharmacy rules work, but with albumin, you know, the way they document it on the nursing flow sheets and the hospital record is slightly different than you would do for blood products, even with the lot numbers and the expiration dates and that kind of thing. Like for a medication, they would document more at the time of issue or track the lot number that's in use for a period of time. Whereas I think, you know, for a blood product, it's very specific to the specific blood product. Whereas, you know, so it's different. And like Jessica, we have been inspected and been asked for our albumin logs at the different facilities we have. Places that do a lot of apheresis and use albumin as an exchange fluid probably have a harder time, you know, keeping track of it. Because it's even as simple as sometimes the lot numbers, you know, may or may not be on the bag in a certain way. They don't use the bottles anymore. They use the bags. So it's sometimes they can't read it. They don't put it in a nursing note the same way. There is something. I don't know if there's anything about that. I don't know particularly why they ask for it, but you know, I can go back in our records and see if they cited us and what they cited us under.
Yes,
that would be helpful.
We also got cited, so we add it to our transfusion committee. I don't know if we still have to do that, but I do recall that we needed to keep track of how much derivative we used, or at least the inspector mentioned that. So maybe we don't have to do that anymore.
Was that recent?
Probably not. I mean, we used to have to actually review the use of albumin like 40 years ago. We were reviewing it. We got rid of that. But I would say within the last 6 years, though.
Okay. If you wouldn't mind emailing me with the details about your last inspections where this was being raised as a requirement for the survey, that would be helpful. And I can follow up with our staff to ensure that we're consistent in our approach. And then in the meantime, Mary Beth and I will come up with a kind of a guidance expectations of the blood derivatives in the facilities and blood banks and pharmacies, what our expectations are. And that'll be shared with both our staff and with the larger community.
Albumin is kept in the blood bank, correct?
Not always.
Nope.
It's not kept in the pharmacy quite a bit. Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
You know, some blood banks stock RHIG, some pharmacies stock RHIG. Some of the derivatives are in the blood bank. Some of them have been moved, like Kcentra has often been moved to the pharmacy so that they can reconstitute it for rapid administration. So it's sort of a hybrid of where these drugs reside.
Should there be a recommendation for consistency someplace? That we are consistent, this is where you'll find it?
Well, yes, you could do that. But because historically we were audited against this by the regulators, the pharmacy didn't keep the type of records that the blood bank inspectors wanted. And therefore, it was always, we had to keep things in the blood bank so that we didn't get cited.
Oh, boy.
I think with albumin specifically, it's usually kept in the pharmacy and or in an Omnicell or something like that where they'll get it.
Small hospital got it in the blood bank.
Yeah, some places, as Jessica points out, still do have it in the blood bank.
Yeah, I know that there is a various models out there, and that it's either in the blood bank or the pharmacy. So there's not consistency across that port. And I'm not sure that we would want to prescribe where it's maintained, but it's really the issue of what is the level of documentation that you need to maintain? What's the expectation? And it shouldn't really be different whether it's being held in the blood bank versus the pharmacy as to what we're expecting to see. So I think that's where Mary Beth and I need to sit down and go through all of the requirements and look at the current regulations, see what there might be changes that need to be made, And then just clarifications that we can provide for the laboratories and for our staff.
And with respect to consent, is there something in the consent guidance about that says derivatives or something?
The consent guidance that we have is just talks about consent for transfusion of blood and blood components. So it does not have any discussion really. It mentions blood derivative briefly, but it doesn't, the larger context of that document is consent for transfusion.
Okay.
And so I don't interpret it as including blood derivatives.
But years ago, I don't know if it was after talking to Danuta or someone else, we eliminated it from our consent. Just because it was too difficult because of, you know, the way it's administered outpatients and things like that. It was
right.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's there's a lot of derivatives are definitely treated much differently than blood products. The documentation levels are, I think, our expectations are clearly different. But we'll work to get that clarity.
Are we ready to vote to adjourn? Is that where we're at?
Oh, can I bring up, this is Rachel Elder. Can I bring up a new topic?
Sure.
It's not really new. Jessica sent out all of the AABB information on tick-borne infections. Thank you. We've been getting a lot of lookbacks for babesiosis, and I just wonder if it's time, would our council send something about more information? I can't remember, was that just a question that we had and that Jessica, you sent us information, but what were we going to do with that information?
No, I think it had to do with that there may be new legislation that required something that was working through the New York State government, if I'm remembering correctly. And I wasn't that worried about it since the documentation of the risks, benefits, and whatever of the testing and all of that stuff about these tick-borne diseases is well understood and documented by ABB and the TTD, Transfusion-Transmitted Diseases Committee. So I wasn't so worried if that legislation passed that we could use what ABB already produced. That's why I sent it.
So yeah. this sort of goes along the consent when we're supposed to tell patient or the providers the risk benefits. And every once in a while we submit, you know, give them some data from our blood supplier. But I did wonder if we should up it a little bit since it does seem like this is actually more of a risk lately in our different areas of New York State. So I just throw that out there. We used to do guidance. There was one we put out there a long time ago. I think about babesia or something along those lines. So
I don't think the risk has really changed more recently. I think the reality is now that there's NAT testing occurring, it's being identified more frequently. And maybe Dr. Sakis from New York Blood Center or someone else on the line might have current statistics as to whether the numbers have changed. But I don't think it's really that we're just doing the testing as a widespread.
I have heard that, but I do know I'm on another board of health that we are seeing more people with babesia and anaplasmosis. Maybe it's better testing. I don't know for the patients, but I do wonder if people are going to identify it 2 weeks after transfusion. So Bruce would like to chime in on what he thinks.
Maybe he's gone.
He left.
Yeah, I don't see him.
But what is this? What is this? What is this? The question is whether we should have guidance.
Yeah.
So it actually started, there was proposed legislation, I believe, I can't remember which house it passed, but it passed. We're going to say it passed the Senate and it was waiting for assembly. It never made it out of committee, out of that other house. So it will be brought up again when the legislative cycle starts in January. But that particular bill apparently has been being kicked around for like the past 7 years. And the bill required this council to review the literature and develop recommendations to the Commissioner of Health, and then back to, I can't remember exactly where the final recommendations would be sent, but for recommendations on the blood supply, if they're for deferments of individuals whose their donors were testing positive for these tick-borne diseases, or if there would be temporary and or permanent deferral of those individuals. So that would be it would be an ask of the council to turn around recommendations. And I believe it gave a very short window of time of only 90 days from the effective date of that law to be able to give those recommendations. So again, it's proposed legislation. It has only passed one of the houses, and we would have to wait to see if it passed the second house. And I definitely have been watching it.
It sounds like there are recommendations on most of those things from the ABB, right? Or
well, yes, that was
federal. There's guidance from FDA also.
Right. Right. And that's why I wondered, so this bill has been kicked around for the last 7 years, and in that 7 year period, FDA and AABB have already addressed it. So, you know, I think it may become a moot issue.
Okay. And if there is a requirement that we turn something around in 90 days, could we just endorse the guidance from the FDA, or?
Yeah, it's a possibility. We would have to call a meeting, but
okay.
Possibly okay. We would be able to do that. So believe me, if that bill passes, you will be the first to know.
Okay. Okay. Should we vote to adjourn? Is that any other business? Like not?
No other business?
I'll move to, this is Rachel, I'll move to adjourn.
Okay, so that concludes our discussion. Anyone willing to second?
Jessica.
Any further discussion? The roll call.
Doctors McCarthy and Becker, I muted the room mic from your room. It's causing a lot of feedback.
Dr. Becker?
No, we were on mute the whole time. Sorry.
Okay.
With respect to the vote to adjourn, Dr. Becker? Dr. Badai? Mr. Husky?
Approve.
Dr. McCarthy?
Approve.
Dr. Schmidt? Oh, I'm sorry. Beverly?
Approve.
Okay. That concludes all for today. Thank you. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Back in the early 90s, they actually tried to